Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here today. We've got Mike Wall coming up in just a moment. Before we get there, I wanted to go over the news and notes that happened on Monday. Mike and I recorded a little bit earlier before some of the transactions took place. Some of the injury news in the press conference with Matt LaFleur took place. So just wanted to go over that very quickly. Also, just a quick reminder of what's coming up the rest of the day on Tuesday. Mike Wall's film breakdown will be coming out a little bit later in the afternoon on the video version of the podcast over on YouTube, and then members only Q&A coming up Tuesday afternoon as well. Make sure to check that out if you're not a member yet. Great time to sign up. Even if you are not a member, reminder that that is open to everyone once we finish the Q&A. So I do open it up to everybody at that point. But if you want to get it commercial free and you want to be there to ask the questions, make sure to check out those memberships as well. All right, as far as the news and notes go, it was not an insignificant day for Green Bay. In the scheme of things, the three players I'm about to talk about probably aren't top of your mind or, you know, for what kind of matters for the Green Bay Packers as their season rolls along. But it should be noteworthy nonetheless that in a way, it kind of felt like Green Bay lost three players on Monday. Let's talk about the injury first. Nick Neiman, their linebacker and special teams ace, who they really never planned on probably playing at linebacker, but is very much a core player of their special teams. It does have a pec injury. Matt LaFleur did say in his press conference that they are very concerned about it, and it does sound like this might be a bit of a long-term issue. If that's the case, you worry about it being a torn pec, which could knock him out a significant period of time. As far as Nick Neiman goes, again, he's probably not somebody that you're thinking of consistently. He's arguably their best special teams player. And you might be thinking, yeah, that's fine, but Andy, their special teams is already terrible. How much worse can it get? I don't want to find out. I really, really don't. It would seem that if he is out an extended period of time or out for the year, he'll clearly go on injured reserve. And the clear and obvious player to pick up would be Christian Welch, who is familiar with the defense, probably a little bit better of a linebacker. You could maybe debate them both back and forth, but is another core special teams player. He's worked with Rich, you know, Bisaccia in the past. He's been in Green Bay in the past. He's on the practice squad in Green Bay right now. So that would seem like a logical replacement for Neiman, but they clearly went out of their way to get Neiman because they thought he was better, and he has been a stud on special teams for them so far. So that is a potentially significant loss for Rich Bisaccia's special teams, and certainly one move to kind of keep an eye on to see what they do with it and to see if it is, in fact, Christian Welch that takes his spot, or if they go in a different direction with that. You would think that they'd want another core special teams player to ultimately take his place. The next one, Micah Robinson, their seventh round pick from this past year, their seventh round 2025 draft pick, who was on the practice squad. He did not make the initial roster. He did make their practice squad, was poached by the Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans traded away Roger McCreary, one of their cornerbacks. He went to the Rams. And then because they had an opening at corner, they picked up Micah Robinson off of the Packers practice squad. He's gone, and Green Bay gets no compensation for that whatsoever. So it's a little bit of a bummer. One of their seventh round picks that they were stashing on the practice squad that I think they kind of liked in camp. Now, if they liked him a lot, they just would have kept him on the active roster, right? They had Kamal Haddon. They had, you know, a transitioned wide receiver, Bo Melton. They could have certainly kept him if they wanted to, but it still would have been nice to kind of keep him around. And clearly there was another NFL team that viewed him as a 53-man rosterable player. That was the Tennessee Titans. He goes over there and will now get a shot with them. Kudos to him and good luck to him in Tennessee, but a bit of a bummer for Green Bay. The other one, if you remember, when they activated Christian Watson over the weekend, Ben Sims was the player that was released. And I think everyone, myself included, just expected that Green Bay's fourth tight end would go unclaimed and that he would end up back on Green Bay's practice squad. Unfortunately, the team that initially signed Ben Sims as an undrafted free agent was not Green Bay. It was Minnesota, and Minnesota claimed Ben Sims when they put their starting quarterback, at least as of the last few weeks, Carson Wentz, on injured reserve with his shoulder injury. So Ben Sims is a Minnesota Viking. Micah Robinson is a Tennessee Titan, and Nick Neiman looks like he's going to be out a significant period of time. Again, in the scheme of things, I don't assume any of you are probably losing any sleep over Nick Neiman, Micah Robinson, and Ben Sims, and you know the overarching theme of how Green Bay is going to do the remainder of the season. But you want to keep as much depth as you possibly can. Ben Sims would have been a great number four tight end to keep around on the practice squad. Micah Robinson was a nice developmental corner to keep on the practice squad and develop and get to training camp next year. That's no longer a thing. And of course, their core and star special teams player is certainly somebody that you would like to have around as well. Unfortunately, does not feel like Green Bay is going to get any of those things. And unfortunately, three players kind of lost for Green Bay for the remainder of this season. That kind of does it for news and notes. Nothing other noteworthy to go over. Make sure you're, again, enjoying this episode with Mike Wall, checking out Mike's film breakdown later today, members-only Q&A, and then, of course, we've got great episodes lined up for you tomorrow as well. Paul Farrington Show, Paul Brettel, Justice Mosqueda later in the week, Grades Video, Carmen Vitale. We've got you covered here 365 days a year, so make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews, and now it is on to the one and only Mike Wall. You know who it is. It's the one and only Mike Wall. You can find him on social media at MikeWall68. We are ready to jump into this Packers-Steelers game and maybe look a little bit ahead to Packers-Panthers as well. Mike, before we get there, we obviously had the live show on Monday. We are now recording this right after for Tuesday's episode. But I'll ask you again, how was your weekend? How are you doing?
Andy, doing great. Bit of a bachelor weekend with my son and I here. Empty house. So we got a puppy dog. Played with him a lot, watched way too much sports this weekend, like an insane amount of sports. I don't know if I got off the couch for more than like 35 minutes at one time, but yeah, you got to have some of those weekends in your life.
Did you watch any of that Barcelona Real Madrid game at all?
The whole damn thing. You know, I love that.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I got to watch about three quarters of it. I didn't see the end. I heard it was chaos at the end, but yeah, Vinny, it's still a Vinny, very
Vinny
fun
threw
game.
A little, Vinny threw a little bit of a fit and because he got taken out, which, like, we could talk about football or soccer offline, but, you know, like, there's some players on every team, and you're like, well, okay, fair enough. Like, if you're taking him out, why is he still on the field? There was a couple of those moments. But, yeah, it was interesting. I love that, like, was it Carvajal got back on and just started chirping at Lamal after – you mean Lamal after the game. Like, kid's 18, got to love him, going to be the next big thing. But, like,
yep.
You don't chirp and then have a bad day, you know.
I just love the atmosphere of games like that. Like you, yeah. Like that's just one that's so tangible and you can feel, like you said, well, we could talk about it more off the air, but that was definitely a fun one as well. But we're here to talk about Packers Steelers. I kind of gave you the floor a little bit, but just in general, kind of key takeaways from this game, what stood out to you as positives, negatives, or again, any kind of direction that you want to go in for this game for the Green Bay Packers?
Obviously, the tale of two halves, like you said earlier, I spoke on it on the live show that when Sam Alu went out at left guard for the Steelers and they were not able to run their jumbo package, or they chose not to because that switched Anderson to the left guard position. They just don't have the personnel for it. I thought it completely just changed this game. I turned it on its head. They were having a ton of success. I don't know what they were averaging per carry when they were in that jumbo package with, you know, another 320-pounder plus the 300-pound tight end. But it just – you know, from a personnel standpoint, the Packers really don't have an answer. You know, you put Isaiah McDuffie on the edge, he's 235, their tight end's 300 pounds. You put Micah Parsons on the edge, he's 255, their tackle's 320. Now you get a double team on the three technique. I mean, it's like, it's a perfect offense until you go like jumbo defensive, you know, goal line defense, and then it should open up DK Metcalf. So, I mean, I love the concept. Obviously, we ran some sort of variation of that with Kevin Berry all the time. We had a ton of success with it. And if you took that away from us, you know, we ran one play 16 times a game back in like 2003, 2004. So you take that stuff away, it kind of affects what you're able to do for the rest of the game. And you certainly saw that change. So I thought that was super interesting. And we've been touching on this for weeks now. The lack of run game or the lack of the ability to move people on the interior of the offensive line, while it has these like moments that we can talk about, people can complain about, I'm sure internally in the locker room, in the media room, they're super upset with, but they're to your point, they're averaging 27 point whatever points per game, and it's like that's a hell of a lot of points in the National Football League. I think you just told me they were tied for fifth. So
yep.
It's amazing to me how much flack Matt LaFleur gets as a play caller while putting so many people in unbelievable positions where your tight end can get 131 of 143 yards after the catch, and they can score 27 points per game without a running game. It's like it's amazing to me.
The interesting thing, and I know it's not as simple as just get big guys in there. I totally understand that, but this is one of the bigger interiors that they've had. Elgton Jenkins, 311 at center. At least that's what he's listed at. Aaron Banks is 325. When Sean Ryan's in there, he's 321. Like, they haven't necessarily had those really big guys in the middle. And it still doesn't feel like they have the ability to kind of move people the way that they, I think, would intend to when they put those three together on the interior.
Yeah. So a lot of, I think, people mistake size with like power or technique with I can go down the street and find you five guys that weigh 300 pounds. I live in Texas. Right, that doesn't mean they can play offensive line.
And, fair point.
You know what you have to, if you really sit here and watch it, and we talked about it on the live show. If you sit and we just sat and broke down one tape, and we just started pointing out footwork, pad level, hand placement, you'd go, "Oh, I understand why they don't win," because it is like 90% of this is technique. One guy's technique's better than the other. The first person in contact always wins, and for whatever reason, like that size. I mean, Tucker Kraft does a pretty good job in the run game for the most part. His techniques, like Sam Laporta, when he was coming out of Iowa, he had the best, like he might've had the best top 10 technique in the entire draft, lineman and tight end included. Like he's just technique wins in the sport because all these guys are phenomenal athletes. So the people that can realize all their athleticism through their technique are the ones that are successful. And our guys right now, for whatever reason, we can dive into that if you want, but for whatever reason, they're not doing that.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. The hard-hitting football action is even better with Prize Picks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never gets old. So keep the season rolling on with Prize Picks by getting $50 instantly in lineups when you play your first $5. So it's time to start getting ready for Week 9. Back in Green Bay as Carolina is set to come to town. This should be a huge opportunity for Green Bay, and I'm expecting an epic performance from both Jordan Love and the ever-steady Romeo Doubs. Elsewhere in Week 9, I'm going with big games from Amon-Ra St. Brown, Davante Adams, and Travis Etienne. Now, here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on at least two player stats. If you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the biggest payouts, go for the power play. No matter which play you make, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks, it's good to be right. Anybody else feeling the financial squeeze right now? Everything just feels a little bit tougher, and I, for one, don't have the time to constantly monitor my finances and see where every little dollar and cent is being allocated. Thankfully, Chime understands that every dollar counts. That's why when you set up direct deposit through Chime, you can get access to fee-free features like free overdraft coverage, getting paid up to 2 days early, and so much more. I highly encourage that you take the time to learn more over at chime.com/packaday. Not only do we use Chime as a family, but I know multiple friends who use Chime and swear by it as well. The early payments, the free overdraft coverage, and access to over 47,000 free ATMs have not only been beneficial, but have come in huge in some really difficult situations. I didn't even mention the ability to get daily balance updates and real-time transaction alerts, which have helped shape our spending habits. So work on your financial goals through Chime today. Open an account in 2 minutes at chime.com/packaday. That's chime.com/packaday. Chime feels like progress.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
Yeah, we've obviously talked about that, and it just kind of continues to be a consistent issue, unfortunately, for Green Bay. And we kind of talked about it on the live show as well. It does feel like they are trying to get the run game going early in games and then they just can't. And then by the time they decide, oh, we're just going to throw the ball, then everything starts to click for this team. What did you see both offensively, defensively, special teams? Everything just felt a little bit off. Keyshawn Nixon, you know, had some of the penalties and some of the big plays given up in the first half of this game. Their run defense, as you mentioned, couldn't stop their heavy personnel packages. I thought that was one of the worst games for the Packers run defense, at least early in the first half. And then offensively, you couldn't get the run game going. You had multiple drops on offense. You had two missed field goals, a muffed punt, a penalty on the opening kick return. Just the first half was pretty nightmarish in almost every single phase. Probably thankful to only be down 9 points at that time. But what did you see that went wrong besides everything that we just talked about in the first half?
Well, I think that's enough, right? I mean, the good news is that the Steelers had to kick field goals and didn't score touchdowns when they got down on the other side of the 40. And because of that, you know, the game was still in hand. Because quite frankly, I think the game completely changes if you're down 2 or 3 scores.
Yes, big time.
So I think I do think that makes a huge difference. When you have those penalties, when you have those drops, you know, it's almost like you're trying to get all the bugs out in the first quarter for some reason, you know, with this team. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's, you know, because certainly you don't attribute drops to play calling. You don't attribute the PI call. Like, some of this stuff is unfortunate. Look, the Packers get calls, the Steelers get calls, the refs are good, the refs are bad, right? I thought it was a pretty even game. I thought, you know, I didn't think the refs affected the game in one way or another. Agreed. Necessarily, right? But there does tend to be more of those kind of head scratching mistakes in the first and second quarter with this team. I don't really know what it is about the team. I don't know that they're starting slow. I just think that for whatever reason, some things aren't clicking. It would be interesting to see if the Steelers had, I mean, I'll just be honest with you. Like, I don't know what the Packers' answer is if the Steelers don't get their left guard hurt. I don't know what their answer is, because what they were doing was not going to be effective. I mean, there's nothing that they had, there's no adjustment they had made throughout the first half that suggested that they had an answer for that that jumbo package. And the Steelers have an entire offense out of that jumbo package. They didn't have to take those guys off the field. And so I really, to be honest, I don't know. I mean, if you watch the Steelers second half, and before I realized that, like, they were injured, Isaac Seumalo was injured, I'm watching, I'm like, okay, so that's two series, one pass. Like, they had one running play in three series, they had one running play. Not jumbo packs, just one running play. And you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, it felt like Arthur Smith was like, I forgot what happened in the first half. I guess I'm not even going to try, you know? And sometimes that happens at halftime. Like, both teams are making adjustments. There's injuries and whatnot. But it's just the NFL is so great because they go in and, you know, they do this little powwow. They get together and they come back out. And it's like something completely new. You never know why.
Well, it's funny because I had that on my things of what I wanted to ask you today, my list of questions for you. Talk to us. I don't think we've talked about this before. What are halftime adjustments in the NFL? You hear it talked about, and then every once in a while you hear it be like, yeah, there's actually not really many adjustments that take place. But there's a very small period of time. Was it like 15 to 20? I think 15 minutes is it that you have to go in there, would do whatever you need to do, and then basically come right back out. How much can you get done? And is there anything really that goes into a quote unquote halftime adjustment?
I think a lot of players will come out and be, there's no such thing. Well, it's not true. The coaches are making adjustments. They just might not tell the players.
Right.
So when the players get an adjustment, it's like on a specific play, like it is like, hey, defense, they're giving us this look. When they give this look, we're checking this. Here's our new check. Offense, when they give us this look, we're going to make this call. You know, if they're doing a wolf blitz, we're making a fup call, blah, 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 blah. Here's where we're going. That's the kind of adjustment we hear. They might be making an adjustment amongst the coaching staff. Like, what are you guys seeing? All right, they're running cover four against this. We want to attack this. We're going to start calling these plays. We don't know that, right? But they are – I think these guys are making some adjustments. And they might – what's always interesting is Arthur Smith for this game, for example, you have – the left guard get hurt. They got to put Anderson in at left guard. They don't have the jumbo package anymore. And they respond by just not running the football at all for 3 straight series. I mean, they one run in 3 series. They go, you start going like, well, I mean, there were some penalties and this and that and the other, but you start going like, well, that didn't make a lot of sense. That can't be the adjustment that they agreed on when they came out at halftime. You know what I mean?
Right.
So those are the parts where, like, they clearly did something. They made an adjustment now, whether it was the right one or not. I mean, the proof's in the pudding.
It does feel like you have to be a little bit thankful and tip your cap to the Steelers for getting to run the ball to open the second half. Even with the injury, like, I would have, so obviously you have three offensive linemen, you know, to back up on game day. Yep. So even if they wanted to keep the guy that was the extra blocker out there and put one of the other ones in at left guard, it just feels like you still could have done that on certain plays. Or even if you like, just try it. Like even if you weren't confident in it, maybe just try it to see first, because like you said, it did not feel like Green Bay had many run defense solutions for what Pittsburgh was running. And it's hard to imagine, you know, one left guard would have made that much difference, but maybe it would have. But either way, I would have, if I were Pittsburgh, I think I would have tried it first before I just would have abandoned it the way that they did.
Well, I'll say that a different way. So the backup is going to be seismically worse than the starter. Isaac's a good.
Yeah, for sure. He's a really good left guard.
Yeah. So whoever you put in there is not going to be nearly as good. And you're not going to put your eighth guy in if your six guys can play. What I would question is, surely your seventh or eighth guy, and this is where it gets like, you don't know what they do at practice, but did they only have one player? Like for us, if Kevin Berry wasn't playing as the bacon package, like U-71 package, I'm thinking back now, like I'm sure like Greg Rugemer, somebody could have done it, but I don't know that we would have done it because he's 350 pounds. You know what I mean? So like maybe that's the way they were thinking about it, but there's nothing unique about Anderson 74 that makes up, by the way, I love the fact that they threw him the ball in the first play. And like,
yes. You know,
like Dan McDuffie was like, what do I do here? Cause if I take him low, people are going to give me shit in the locker room. But if I take him high, he's 320 pounds. You see, he's like, what do I do? He like almost like hugged him, you know, but 74, you're like, there's nothing unique about his body type where you're like, I can't just replace him with anybody. So it must be that they don't practice with the backups aside from him on those plays. That's the only justification I could come up with for not staying in that package, at least trying it, like you said.
Did you see anything from Green Bay specifically, offensively, defensively, anything that they changed in the second half that allowed them to play better and just kind of go out and boat race the Steelers in the second half? Or was it part of it being, again, you know, their left guard goes out and it makes it easier on defense, and Green Bay just executed better in the second half in all phases?
Well, they obviously got great field position almost every time they got the football, whether it was the turnover or just punting, because they, you know, the Steelers couldn't get a first down for the first, what, three, four series. That obviously plays into it. Just advantageous field position. Look, they found some things out with, you know, the Tucker Kraft stuff, particularly like the two plays into the flat where you're like, they're not even guarding him. I mean, they forgot who was supposed to, they motioned over one time. They were going to rock and roll the safeties. And then the safety's like, oh shit, am I a man? And he's on the other side of the field and the 55, the linebacker's going, it's like, who's on first? And they did that twice with him for huge plays. And so I don't know that, I mean, certainly you're putting those shifts and motions in. Matt LaFleur's doing that because he's hoping that'll happen.
Yep.
But with the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, you're not expecting them to make those kind of mistakes. And so, and those were the big chunk plays. It's like, you know, in the National Football League, you're trying to create as many explosive plays as you can. Explosive plays win football games. Most teams aren't going to go 4 yards at a, you know, 4 yards in a cloud of dust, 5 yards in a cloud of dust down the field. I certainly don't know that we're that kind of team either, quite frankly, with our running game the way it is.
Yep.
But you think about with Jordan Love going under center, play action, rolling out to his left, throwing across his body to Wilson, and then him breaking three tackles, getting that, you know, that 15-yard first down. You think about, you know, the ball to Christian Watson, all the balls to Tucker Kraft that, you know, seem like he just is throwing people off like they're flies. Those are the plays that are making these second halves huge. And I don't know. I mean, a couple of those plays are busted plays. A couple of those plays are designed where they've out-schemed them. But for whatever reason, it just works better. Maybe there's some fatigue, mental fatigue with the defense. I don't know. Maybe there's just too much for them to look at. But those plays, for whatever reason, are happening in bunches in these second halves, like you pointed out earlier. And I don't know that – I mean, does that feel like it's a like it's some sort of adjustment, or is it just like, nah, we're just hitting the Rolodex right here, and they maybe saw the one or two things, but otherwise it's just players making plays, man.
Yeah, it feels like the latter. I do wonder just how much of this is just bizarro, you know, kind of happenstance too, of like, if you go through this game and you just sort of rearrange the drives a little bit differently and you get like touchdown, punts, touchdown, missed field goal, punt. And like, if you had the same exact amount of touchdowns, field goals, and, you know, non-point scoring drives, and it was spread through the course of the game, probably feels like a pretty normal game overall. It feels weird these last few weeks where the first halves are just, everything is a slog. Everything is so difficult to get any points, 7.7 points in the first half, the last 3 weeks combined. And then, you know, you're getting the second half and you're just going completely nuclear. I don't have a great explanation for it, but it's a really interesting juxtaposition between the two. That's for sure.
So generally when you start talking about like who finishes games better, who finishes plays better, like who gets the most knockdowns, when you're just, you know, talking about that kind of stuff, it's a lot of it has to do with who's in better shape. And one of the things that we don't talk about, and I don't know if it's a thing or not, honestly, is this team just in better shape than everybody else? Like, are they in such good shape that mentally they're not fatiguing because their body's tired? So their body's not tired, so their mind's not tired. Like that stuff is real. Like that, when you're talking about just individual matchups, that stuff matters a ton. And maybe that is something that, maybe because they're fresher, I don't know if they're just, I've never really considered the Matt LaFleur Packers like really hard practice guys. Like, I don't know if they beat themselves up a lot. But maybe part of that is like, you kind of feel like the Steelers probably are under Tomlin. You just think about personas, right? Yep. So maybe one team's fresher than the other. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but it's a head scratcher. It's awesome to watch though, man. Like the amount of points these guys score in the second half, it's like, yeah, it's like you're watching a Tecmo Bowl or something. It's a
joke. I do agree. I think I go back to what we talked about in the live show as well. It does feel like they have an ideal version or vision in their head of what this offense wants to look like, being balanced, running the football with Josh Jacobs. And, you know, today's the day we're going to establish the run, and then it doesn't work. And you end up with 7 points in the first half. And then you get to the second half and you're just like, all right, Jordan, passing attack. Let's go put some points on the board. And it just feels like everything kind of clicks into place a little bit more, but it shouldn't still be that easy, especially when you're down 12 points, the other team gets the ball first in the second half, and you become relatively predictable, and you're willing to, you know, play a little bit more too high safeties and not give up those big plays and make them, you know, dink and dunk their way down the field. It should be really difficult. And yet somehow Green Bay, down two scores, was able to matriculate their way right down the field a couple times to open the second half. I mean, obviously the big play was early in that first drive in the second half. It's 3rd and 6. And that's when you get the ball popped up to Tucker Kraft, and Kraft goes up and makes the play, and he brings it 50 some yards. Yeah. And so that's your big playmaking play that gets them kind of right back in the game. If they don't convert that one, you're 3 and out to open the second half, punting the ball away, down 12, Pittsburgh's ball, and who knows where things go from there. So that was a huge play in the game, but still credit to them for finding ways to put up the points.
Yeah. Players still have to make plays. It's interesting that you start thinking about like, why is this happening? How big of a finger can we point at just Tucker Kraft being on this football team and making that kind of difference? Not just in this game, but in a great deal of these games. Because, you know, you think about the Steelers, right? They get rid of their all-pro safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick. They send him back to Miami. I think they get Jalen Ramsey, who's been a fantastic player, but is not the same guy that he's always been. And, you know, it's time catches up with everybody kind of thing. But you look at a lot of, you know, like you look at the safeties for Pittsburgh now, like I was actually, and I pointed out on the show, like I was shocked about how physical they were not, and how you've got a lot of guys because of the new rules. They're smaller, they're more coverage guys, they're not downhill players, they're not enforcers. So what happens? You get a Tucker Kraft and he's just handoff, you know, he's just, you know, he's shoving these guys away like they're nothing. And part of that is just by design now. Like if you've got an athletic tight end who is a violent runner, or a violent, you know, running back that gets into the secondary, like, or a violent receiver, a DK Metcalf or some of these guys, like maybe these safeties just aren't built to tackle them. And that's one of the reasons we're seeing these plays. Like that, to your point, that Tucker Kraft play should not have happened. That was a mistake that could have been a pick. And instead of a pick, it's a 50-yard pickup.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Tucker Kraft, who was phenomenal in this game. Mike, you and I spend a lot of time in the weeds, in the minutia, looking at all the little nuances of the game. We probably haven't spent a whole heck of a lot of time just talking about Jordan Love. He was phenomenal in this game overall. Big time showcase game, Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, Sunday Night Football. And he certainly came to play, had a couple drops early in the game, which stalled out some drives. But overall, on the season and in this game, he's pretty much been everything that you could possibly ask for at this point. Your impressions of Jordan Love in this game and so far this season?
Just doing it, I think this game was the standard that he wants to set in executing the game plan correctly. And being able to, you know, hitch your plant foot on five and letting it rip, whether it's the backside dig, whether it's the out from Christian Watson, whether it's the flat route, reading the coverage issues, you know, the safety and the linebacker get boggled up on who's going to cover Tucker Kraft, getting the ball to him in the perfect spot so he can, you know, keep stride and run up field. It's the little things, the timing routes on the quick outs that he always continues to hit, whether it's the quick out or whether it's the 10-yard out where he throws over the overhang safety. His ability, I think, to process quickly, and in this game, maybe more so than some of the games prior, to take what's there and not wait for the next thing. In games like this, if, you know, for example, if the Tucker Kraft play goes poorly and it ends up in a pick, which it could have.
Yep.
Right. If the Christian Watson play, which, you know, was a great play, but not the best thrown ball he's ever thrown in his life. And if that backside safety 22 had one of the worst games of his life, I would imagine if he makes a play in that ball, you know, different outcome.
Yep.
So it's always one of those things with Jordan where you're like, if those plays work, you're like, fantastic, right? If those plays don't work, whether it's and they're just knocked down, no big deal. But if those two plays end up in a pick, you're having a different conversation, right?
So good point.
There's still, if you're just looking at it from a process standpoint, I think he's doing a fantastic job overall. You love it when, and this happens whether it's Brett, whether it's Aaron, whether it's Jordan, when you, maybe not so much with Aaron, he's a little more conservative, with Brett and Jordan, when they get those 50-50s coin flip balls and they go well, you're like, God bless America, is this guy good, right? And this is one of those games, and he's going to have a ton of them because we talked about it last week. You can't have the quarterback of your dreams that doesn't take chances. And the one thing that you love is you go, I feel good about Tucker Kraft versus their safeties for the reasons that we just discussed. I feel good about Christian Watson versus anybody on the field for the reasons we just discussed. They're both big receivers, big tight ends that can run fast. Like, that's the matchup we want. I'll take it 100 out of 100 times. The Romeo Doubs play on fourth down last week. You take it every time. If it connects, you feel like, oh, even better, right? So he's a phenomenal football player. I like that he takes risks. I think that I think that for the most part they're well timed, you know. And yep. He's just doing such a good job of executing the game plan as it's put forth on paper, man. It really is impressive.
I thought, you know, last week against Arizona, we talked about some opportunities to take some easy throws and some checkdowns and some things like that. And he tried to force some stuff, maybe a little bit more, tried to make the big play. I thought this was a great example and kind of what you're talking about of like proof of concept of how he wants to play moving forward, of just seeing the open receivers, taking what's there, letting his receivers and weapons do the heavy lifting. And then when he needs to make a big play, he can still go out and do so. But it felt like he was in great rhythm with the offense in this game. We'll be right back.
I agree completely. And going back to the Arizona game, I think that's the contrast of the two styles. And when he executes like he did yesterday, and it's not only the pass that the decision that you make, but the way the ball gets to the receiver. Is he in stride? Is it on his front foot? Is it on his back foot? Does he have to change direction? Like those little things make a huge difference in the ability to pick up yardage after catch. And he's doing, like last night was just a clinic. And you know that, you know, he's going up against like his mentor, you know, who's a Hall of Fame, top notch, best of the best quarterback. Like he showed up to play. Guys had his back. Guys made plays when there were, you know, plays to be made. And, you know, Luke on the other side of the football, and that didn't necessarily happen as much, right? And that's, it's great to have a supporting cast that believes you. And, one the cool thing about Jordan and being a homegrown is spending 3 years not starting, going through the process of learning under Aaron Rodgers, but being a part of this team, being a part of the fabric and the family, developing those relationships with this young receiving room. Like that, the whole story is cool, man. And I think that that's part of what makes Green Bay really special is for the last three quarterbacks, at least their ability to bring guys in, or in particular with Aaron and Jordan, bring them in, sit them, make them a fabric of this team, make them the focal point, have that family, that unity, and then go out there and perform.
It's been fun to watch for sure. Speaking of Christian Watson, who we talked about there, he comes back from the ACL MCL injury. Looks like he doesn't miss a beat. He looks unbelievable. I now understand why everyone, when asked about Christian Watson in the building of how he's doing, there was a wry smile and he's like, yeah, he looks phenomenal. Four catches, 80 plus yards, blocking on the outside, opening things for underneath receivers. You just tell how important he is to this offense. I was blown away with, 35 snaps in his first game back. I thought for sure it'd be capped at around like 25, maybe even a little bit less. He plays 35 in this one, came at a perfect time with Jaden Reed already out, Dontavian Wicks out for this game. I was pretty blown away with what he was able to do in his first game back.
Yeah, awesome to see. He got him the ball, I think, the second play of the game on the quick out. Everyone's going to talk about the deep pass or the block on the touchdown for Josh Jacobs. But you just love the effort. You love to see guys come back from injury and have immediate success. And certainly just understanding what piece of the puzzle he fills. We talked about on the live show, like you've got now another guy who fills a very specific role for you on offense that a defensive coordinator has to really start going, oh, now I got to pay attention to that. Like, oh, hell, like what, it was one thing when Ronnie Dobbs was running the corner. It's another completely different thing when Christian Watson's running it, right? He's just that much. He's just a freak athlete, fast. So you love that you have the tight end who has the yards after catch. You love that you have the deep threat. You love you have the guy, the golden, with the ball in his hands. You love the route specialist in Romeo Dobbs. You love that you have all these pieces where coordinators are going, what the hell do I do now? But, hats off to Christian Watson, because coming back from an ACL injury, for those who haven't been around, the confidence is the problem. People always talk about, like, I just don't have confidence in what I'm doing. And for him to come back and play with such confidence in and out of his breaks, being physical into contact, like, it was just really cool to see. And you see, like, Scataboo getting hurt yesterday and all that shit. Like, guys get hurt in the National Football League, man. It just sucks to see people getting hurt. And so when guys come back and overcome those injuries, it's just I love it. I absolutely love it.
One of the first things I talked about too was the mental side of it, of just, your first game back, I can't even imagine what that first cut, that first acceleration, everything like that, of just getting through that mental hurdle of like, yep, it's going to hold up and nothing's going to go wrong or anything. And again, he looked like he didn't miss a beat from, it looks like prime Christian Watson. I can't say enough. I'm so happy for him. That's a brutal situation. And what at the time was going into a contract year, what should have been this year, he's now signed the 1 year extension, which looks very smart for Green Bay after the way he played yesterday. But I'm just really, really happy for him, because I know that's a long journey coming back from an injury like that. He made it as quick as I think you possibly could. And to look like he did was pretty freaking cool. So kudos and hats off to him. A couple quick ones before we get you out of here. Corners. Nate Hobbs basically benched, played 4 snaps in this game. Carrington Valentine, we both talked about, was look good in this one. Again, a couple hiccups here and there, but he just loved the way that he plays overall. Keyshawn Nixon, bit of a rough day at the office. What do you make of this corner room, and is it good enough in the long term for them to get where they want to go?
Well, that's probably predicated on how good the pass rush just continues as it continues to evolve. Certainly, I just like Carrington Valentine. Even from week one, it's the physicality that he brings to the run game and the short passing game that I like. You're going to get beat in this league on deep stuff. He had a great play against DK Metcalf yesterday on that deep ball in the left pocket of the end zone, but like, you're going to get beat on deep stuff in this league. You're going to get some PI in this league. It's just like, the league is not geared for cornerbacks. So it's like, what if you have a shutdown guy like Deion Sanders talked about yesterday, like there's 5% of the cornerbacks want to make the play, 95 just want to avoid it, right? If you have one of those 5%, that's fantastic. I don't know that we do, but if you do, that's fantastic. The rest of the guys in the league, it's like, if you can come up and make tackles and you can tackle in the run game, like I like you. And because of that, like, that's why Keyshawn Nixon's been, that's why he's playing. You know, honestly, that's really why he's playing. I mean, he does that really well, in my opinion, over the last couple of years. And yeah, you're going to have some of these games where it's like, yeah, you get some calls, maybe you get beat on some. Like, I think that's part of playing the most, in my opinion, the most difficult position on the field is trying to play corner on a really good wide receiver. Like, I don't think there's anything harder on the football field than doing that. So
agreed.
Yeah, I think it was a really smart move. We talked about it last week to give Carrington Valentine another chance. I just think he earned it. And Nate Hobbs did nothing to keep his spot, quite frankly, over the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
But I do think it is all going to boil down to the spine of the defense and how, you know, like yesterday was such a good example of not to switch topics, but, you know, obviously the pass rush plan against Aaron Rodgers is like get in his face, you know, and they did such a good job of pushing the pocket. Obviously bringing Micah Parsons, you know, he gets all his sacks from being the tackle, but when you have your center literally being told like, go wherever he goes, if he's in the middle, you just chase him. Then Rashawn Gary gets another two sacks without having to win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you get like Rashawn Gary is, and I'm not throwing shade at Rashawn Gary at all, but is there a bigger benefactor from Parsons showing up than Rashawn Gary? Like no. He gets free. He's gotten at least four free sacks where they're either literally not going to block him at all, or they just block him into the play because the center's running over to Parsons or this, that, or the other thing, right? Like that is the Micah Parsons effect.
Yep.
And as long as that's going to continue, and the Steelers actually had a really good idea, at least on how to block him, like line up the back in the backfield, wherever he shows up, just go put him over there right on the line of scrimmage to stop him initially. And, you know, for the most part, like that's a pretty effective idea. But he is so good that he, you know, he beats Jonnu Smith's, you know, terrible chip block.
Yeah.
Then beats the tackle inside, beats the, you know, splits the guard and the tackle and gets a sack. The things that guy continues to do, the speed of which he plays, as long as he can maintain that, like, I think everybody's going to be okay because that is just, it's just a real, it's such a mental drain for the entire offense, quarterback, offensive line, everybody. Like, the timer's going off in your head all the time. It's such a freaking emotional and mental drain when you got a dude like that creating havoc.
Yeah, it every single time they lined him up over center, Micah, it just felt like Aaron wanted to get rid of the ball quickly. It felt like there was a little bit of, I don't know, maybe again, that was just a happenstance thing too, but it felt like there was a little bit more of like, again, seeing Micah coming right at you from over center, just felt like he was getting rid of the ball a little bit quick in those situations. I had special teams on my list of things to talk about, Mike. I don't know if I have the stomach to talk about it. So I'll go to a more fun one. Jersey swaps. Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers, a big deal. Jersey swap. Did you partake in jersey swaps? And if so, what was your biggest jersey swap that you partook in?
No. So I'm so old that when I played, we weren't friends with the other team. I mean, the truth be told, that's the only time I ever was like, the only time I was ever friendly, I'm just trying to think of like, I went over and bullshitted with the other team was when I played the Packers. It was the only time. I think Brett and you know, Cliffy and Flanny and all those, I think Flanny was, no, Flanny played. But all those guys came over and, of course, you know, I love those guys. I don't think I ever stuck around to hang out with anybody else. Like, we were not, I'm old school, man. Like, we were not friends. Yep. We're not going to dinner together. You know, none of that. I remember, I'll tell you one real quick one if you want it.
Yeah, go for it.
Tell me to shut up, but. I'll never forget. So we had Colin Jenkins on our team, right? So Chris, his older brother Chris, is the best defensive tackle in the game.
Yep.
So we're playing Carolina, first game of the season, Monday Night Football. We ended up getting like, you know, on the Madden bus. Our offensive line did that game because we had a pretty good game against these guys. But, you know, we're coming in and we're down in Carolina. And Chris and I played against a bunch already. He's a young guy, but like we have a ton of respect for one another. But we're not friends, right? And we go into our hotel. I got my bag, grab my key. I open the elevator. Goddamn, Chris Jenkins is sitting in the elevator, and it's just him. And I look at him. I step on. I put my bag down. I go, are we going to have a problem? And he goes, nah, man, I'm not on duty right now. We good until tomorrow. And I was like, all right, fair enough. Pick my bag up, like, you know, put my back against the wall so we can see each other. And you know, that's how it used to be for real. Yeah. It wasn't like there was no like, hey man, how you doing? Let's dap it up and go, you know, have dinner. It's nah, it's none of that.
That's how I remembered it. Cause my expectation was that you were gonna say, no, we didn't do jersey swaps, but I don't know when that change happened, of when that became a big thing. I didn't have like a recollection in my mind if that was something that happened when you were playing or, but that was my expectation.
It was a baseball thing. There was a Sports Illustrated article. I'll never forget this. Like, I think it was Derek Jeter was having dinner with somebody on the Boston Red Sox during the championship series.
Series, yep.
And I remember, I forgot the who wrote the article, but they were like, what has happened to sports that these two guys are having dinner together? Like, life is not as we know it anymore.
Right.
And I remember I read that.
Red Sox. This is like
sports, right? And I just remember going like, or like, you know, that would be like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson having freaking dinner together before the playoff game. Like, are you kidding me? Like, it just doesn't even compute. I can't even fold that over in my brain. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me at all. I remember I had, when I went to the Pro Bowl with Tommy Harris, we had just been in like literally a fight on the field like 2 weeks prior. Right. And like the NFC playoffs, yep, or whatever. And we had played twice that year and all this. And I remember, you know, we saw it, and that was like one of the first times where we cool. It's like, oh yeah, we cool. You know, but you have to check in, you know, it's part of the game. But like, it's just different, man. Different times.
It very much is. This is the Mike Wall Bowl, Packers Panthers this week. Quick thoughts on Packers Panthers.
I mean, this is one of those, I said this against the Bengals, so I don't want to jinx it, but you just don't think there's any scenario, especially, I mean, are they going to have a starting quarterback or is it Dalton going
to
play? I mean,
Dalton not sure yet. It seems to be Dalton, but we don't know for sure yet.
Yeah, if the Red Rifle, whatever, is in, man, I feel really good about our chances. He played some bad football this weekend, and I think the Panthers are a fun team to watch. Like, obviously, when they, you know, Chuba Hubbard was hurt and they brought the other kid in, he had a couple of big games. You like their running game, but they're just not. There's different levels in the NFL right now. I think the Packers are on a different level.
Do you want to guess the line?
9.5.
12.5. 12.5 point favorites for Green Bay at home against Carolina.
Green Bay at home. Oh yeah. Okay. You could totally believe it, man. Like they look, Bryce Young looked pretty good a couple weeks prior. By the way, he's got the best voice for, you know, when they've got the boom on him, when he's like calling his huts and stuff, like he's got the most like gentle voice.
I don't know if I've heard it. I'll have to, if he does play out,
keep an eye. Like, you know, you used to like Aaron and, you know, Jordan, hey, it's like kind of, you know, all right guys, let's go, you know, he's like real gentle.
Just very kind, very kind-hearted.
He's having a good year, but too bad.
Mike, I cannot thank you enough. You're an absolute legend every single week. Always learn something, always a great conversation. Where can we find all of your incredible work, and what do you got coming out this week?
I'm putting out a show here actually this afternoon. Hopefully you guys will put it up over on your platform. Andy, thank you again for that. And then I'll do a preview at the end of the week with the Panthers. Maybe we'll do an Ikem Ekwonu deep dive or something like that. The old left tackle.
He's a fun player. Like I said, we look forward to the Mike Wall Bowl. I don't know. Do we count Packers Seahawks as a Mike Wall Bowl too? I guess probably that one is too, but
yeah, I tell you what, I love playing for the Seahawks. They were a fantastic organization. I wish I could have given them more. Like I've got, you know, I sucked, but then I was on IR after like 6-7 games, right? But that place made me fall in love with football again after being in Carolina. Carolina was rough.
I can imagine. Mike, again, thank you so much. Follow him over on social media at MikeWall68. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can check out Mike's great content over on Process to Perform and here on the Packaday podcast as well. We'll be back chatting hopefully on a Victory Monday on Packaday Live next Monday. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.